Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. I've done over 1,000. There's a pattern that I noticed, and this interview is about that pattern. I want to understand a little bit better. The pattern is that a lot of the most successful entrepreneurs who I've interviewed start out by understanding a specific customer pain, often by experiencing that pain themselves. Then they create a solution in the form of software, sometimes services, that solves that pain. And what I want to understand is how they do it. I want to understand the process of how it's done. And so I specifically asked to have Steli Efti on here, the founder of Close.io, because this is how he did it. He started Close.io after doing sales himself, understanding the challenges involved in using other people's sales software, and realizing, you know what, there's got to be a better way. And then he created it. And that better way is now a piece of software called Close.io. That's also the URL where you can go see it. It is a CRM that increases your sales so that by giving your sales team one place for all its communication. Basically, if you want to see the phone call that one of your salespeople made, it's in Close.io. If you want to see a note that somebody made about a conversation with a client, it's all in there. That's the idea behind Close.io. The other thing that I want to talk to him about, and the other thing is that we've been talking a lot in interviews here on Mixergy about how software is now often being sold with actual salespeople. It used to be about creating the perfect landing page. It used to be about A/B testing. It used to be about buying ads. But more and more, I'm noticing that the people who I interview and the people in my audience who are building bigger companies actually have salespeople. Actually, we'll have somebody fill out a form, and then a salesperson will follow up and close the sale. And so I want to talk to Steli about how to hire salespeople. And specifically, I'm using as my guide for that part of the conversation, his book. It's called The Sales Hiring Playbook. And I want to understand from him when it's time to hire a salesperson, how to hire a salesperson, and how to integrate that person into your company. By the way, if you want that book, he is giving it away for free to anyone who's listening to this interview. You can get that and a bundle of other resources, including templates and I think a couple of ebooks, all available at close.io/Mixergy. And this whole interview is sponsored by two great companies. The first will help you host your website right. It's called HostGator. And the second is a company where we hire developers and so many people in our audience have. It's called TopTal. Steli, dude, that was a really long intro. 2:44 seconds. I had a lot to get in there.
Man, I was. You did a great job, but I felt a little bit sorry for you.
It was such a long intro about me. And how about the fact that before the interview, I said, look, it's pronounced close.io, right? And then in the first time that I mentioned it, I said close.io. And I was looking at your face to see, like, how does Steli handle that? That I just said his name, his company name wrong.
You know how I handled it? I thought, man, Andrew works really hard, and it doesn't really matter that much if he says close.io or close.io. It's all good.
Hey, you know, I like to ask this question. So let me start off with this. What's your revenue at close.io?
Yeah, we don't disclose the revenue, but it's substantial. It's many millions a year, and we're profitable.
Over 5 million? Can we say that?
We can say that, yeah.
Over 5 million in sales? Can you say if it's over 10 million? And I'm not pushing here. I just want to know where you're
coming from. I'm not gonna give you any more because if we now define a range, you know, we're gonna get very close to it. But it's definitely more than 5.
You do have outside funding, right?
Yes and no. So we received a seed round many years ago when the company was completely different.
When it was Elastic
entity. Even before that.
Really? Okay.
Even before Elastic, yeah. And then. So it was convertible notes right after we exited Y Combinator, and we never raised any more money. We just became profitable. So yes, we've received some outside funding, but Close.io has always been a profitable product and company, and we run the business as if we were a bootstrap business because, you know, the board is basically the three co-founders of the company, and we are not chasing any future funding rounds or anything like that.
I see. Okay. All right. And the whole thing started when you were doing sales. The company was called, I forget the
Elastic Sales.
Elastic Sales. Elastic. Thank you.
Yep.
You were going to do sales as a service, kind of like you can just go to AWS, to Amazon, and get extra storage if you need it. You thought anyone could just come to you and get salespeople.
Yep.
And then it seems like you closed it. Is it down? Is it done? Where is Elastic Sales?
Yeah, we stopped doing Elastic Sales. So we did Elastic Sales for around 2 years, two, 2 years or so. And from day one, we started developing Closeout as an internal piece of software, but we never intended to release it. And I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit more. But when we launched Closeout as a separate product, for a year, we were running both companies, Elastic Sales as a services business and Closeout as a software business. And within 12 months, the software business had, or Closeout had surpassed the revenue on the services side, and we decided to shut it down. So since January 2014, we've exclusively been running Closeout. We've not done kind of any sales consulting or outsourcing
services. No sales, no more Elastic Sales customers.
No more Elastic
Sales. The reason I ask is this website says we're not accepting any more customers. We're happy to support sales efforts via Closeout blog. I see. Okay. So that's done.
Yeah.
And am I right to understand that you found problems as you were doing sales for other people that led you to create your own software?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Give me an example of one problem that you experienced.
Yeah, so we never intended to build sales software. It's like if you had told me 6 years ago I would be running a CRM business, I would had punched you in the face. Like there was nothing in me that
Why?
Wanted to go to this market.
Why?
Because it was it seemed like such a crowded market, right? So CRM might be the most competitive category in software itself, right? It's just like the amount that. Like there's many, many big players that people are aware of. There's many, many smaller players that people are aware of.
The big player is Salesforce in the space, right?
Yeah. Salesforce is the big player. But there are so many CRMs, in every vertical, in every kind of country. There's just so much. And even beyond the commercial CRMs that are out there, there is millions and millions of CRMs that are kind of homegrown, businesses that build their own internal CRM. So this is such a crowded market that it didn't seem super appealing to me as like this should be a market we should attack. When people ask me how we got into it, I always say we stumbled into it, right? It was just that. So when we started building sales software, it came out of two main reasons. One was that I hated the sales software that was out there. So this, I think, is an important insight, although I didn't realize it at the time. I was doing lots of sales, but I didn't want to use sales software for 8-9 hours a day, right? Just purely selfishly from an end user perspective. And we had two of my co-founders were technical people. So it was like, hey, we have some engineering resources. I had sales software. If we want to build this massive outsourced sales team, let's just build software that allows us to do that, right? And to scale that.
So that's one thing. You hated the software. Yeah. What's the other thing that you realized?
The other thing was just that we had developer resources.
I see. Right? But let me ask you this, though. Yeah. Salesforce is customizable. There are tons of other tools. Why do you have to have the perfect tool? Why don't you just say, you know what? It doesn't have to be the fun experience that I'm looking for. This isn't Facebook. I'll just take Salesforce. I'll adjust it. What was missing in Salesforce? What was missing? And I could start naming other competitors. But what I realize is that I lose my guess when I start naming their competitors. Like they get a little angry. And I don't want the anger. I want the insight. What was missing? Yeah. Why couldn't you just do it? You just suck it up and use what was there.
So I think that speed played a big role in all of this, right? So of course you can do anything. The beauty of Salesforce is you can do anything and everything with it. Right. And it is the right tool for certain size business. Right. If you're an enterprise, a massive enterprise business, we send you away to Salesforce. Right. We don't want your business because we can't service you. But if I'm taking on new clients, new businesses, I have to do sales for, and we have to onboard really quickly because every day lost, every hour lost with a sales rep is money we're losing as a services business. The last thing I want to do is use a software product that takes many weeks to onboard sales reps on and takes hundreds and hundreds of thousands to customize. It's just a very slow tool that is probably right for a massive organization. But if you're small and nimble and want to move fast, it was just too painful.
Do you remember one specific issue that you had when you were dealing with it?
Honestly, I can't tell you many issues I personally have had, honestly, with it, because I never used it to the extent where I could have any many issues. Anytime I used Salesforce, it was really just for a few weeks and then just stopped using it.
No, I mean with other software. Was there one thing that you wish you could have done? Like I'll tell you that Bob Heiler, my mentor, who helped put together some notes for me so I could ask you the right questions on this topic, he said that he used to manage a sales team and getting people to go and enter data into the software was just a constant battle. You kind of feel like a teacher telling people to do their homework. Was that an issue, getting them to do it? Do you remember one thing that was especially painful?
Yeah, so that was one, and we can talk about that in a little bit. The one of the biggest pain points was, we would do a lot of calls, sales calls, and it would take between 11 and 12 clicks. If you wanted to integrate a normal CRM with some kind of a calling software and making sure that everything is tracked, just took an incredible amount of clicks, and it just slowed down the process to a painful degree. And one of the first things that we did when we built Close.io was to say, hey, we want to make lots of sales calls. We want those calls to be made out of the CRM, and we want it to automatically track these calls. And we're the first ones that did that, had a CRM that had calling right out of the bat, out of the box in the product. So that was one big pain point, was just the amount of data, manual data entry, the amount of clicking and context switching when all I want to do is make calls and push forward in terms of our sales numbers.
And that was such a big issue that you had to go and create your own software for it. You couldn't just say, look, these people have nothing else to do except for sell. They'll do it.
Oh, well, you can suck up a lot of things, right? But the question is just like, how painful is it? I think from my perspective, it was clear that if we want to have the most productive salespeople on earth, right, and if we want to be able to scale this massive sales force that's incredibly productive, we want to empower our salespeople to do what they're really great at, which is communication, right? Well, sales is nothing else than result-driven communication. So we want to empower them to communicate, close deals, drive revenue. Everything else, we want to automate and take away from their hands to make them happier, more productive, and to make sure that we have, you mentioned manual data entry. Salespeople don't just suck at it because it slows them down. They also find shortcuts to do it, which then results in you having a massive amount just BS data in your database. Like, we did sales for over 200 different venture-backed startups in Silicon Valley. We saw all their CRMs, right? And they had, it didn't matter if it was Salesforce or any other system out there. When we looked at the data, we're like, what the hell is this? And they would always, it always came back to this thing of like, yeah, when we started, it was a good concept. But as we added more and more rules and more statuses and more workflows and more people, you know, we know that we have a data issue.
What do you mean? What's bad data that someone would put in?
Oh, I mean, for example, you know, there would be a certain way to tag a hot prospect, right? And then salespeople would write that status, you know, in all capital letters, in small letters, in with typos. They would come up with their own shortcut to describe that. And all of a sudden, one simple tag that should find you all the prospects of a given nature would now be 13 to 20 different tags. And there was no way for you as a company to figure out.
I see, because they manually had to add that tag themselves. I see.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to get at, Steli, is it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong from your experience, but it seems to me like until there's a big enough pain, it's not worthwhile to create software to solve it or a business to solve it, because the pain that people have will make them feel okay with trying out new software that's not complete, or in your case, writing your own software and taking time away from the main job. Is that right? Did you feel a pain that was that severe, or am I looking for an exaggerated feeling that's not there?
I think honestly for us, so there's multiple levels of looking at this, but for us, it was not that the pain was so big that we finally had to give up on using commercial software and then build our own, right? That was not what happened. For us, it was just a dislike for what was out there and the resources internally to build something else. There was as much thought as we put into this.
I see.
But then we were in the unique position that we were doing sales for 200 different companies.
200 clients. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So we saw all these different use cases and sales cycles and sales processes. B, we had to like onboard and build sales teams very quickly, right? We couldn't waste lots of time. Then we saw what the data and the setup were that these companies were having before they started working with us. And all these things combined led to a number of strong insights on like what is wrong with how teams are doing this today and how software is being used today and how should it be done right? How do we correct this wrong? And once we did that, we saw that we were right because people started asking us to purchase this product and give us their money. So it was a very organic process for us.
How How did they know that this product existed and that they could actually use it?
Yeah, so two things happened. One was that we all these clients that we were doing sales for, many of them had internal sales teams as well. And inevitably, we would do a screen share, show them our numbers, and give them access to our own system. And they would go, well, you use a really cool system here. Your sales reps are super productive. Can we also buy the software and not just the services? That was one thing. The other thing that happened was that our salespeople, you know, they had other friends that were in sales, and they would show them our software, brag to them, and go, ha ha, this is only for people that work in our company. Look how cool my CRM is versus the shit thing that you need to use, right? And then their salespeople would start sending us emails or ping their friends and go, we want to buy the software as well. So those were the first two kind of signs that we got from the market, very organic signs that, hey, we might have something that's not just awesome for us, but that lots and lots of other people will want to use as well.
I see. So you started out by using, you started out using whatever your client's software was, right? So if they use Salesforce, you used it. If they use HireRise, you use that, et cetera. No?
No.
No, you had your own internal stuff?
Yes.
And how did you interact with their software, with the 200 clients?
So what we would do is we would take a look at they would give us access to their existing CRM. We would get data out from it. And then we would use our own CRM to perform whatever task it was and give them the data back. Right?
I see.
But we always use our internal system.
I see. So you never wanted to go into their process and tag. They would always have their leads in there. Somehow their leads would come to you. And once you tapped into them and closed the sale, you'd pass it back?
Yes.
Okay. Is it only after you close the sale you pass it back?
Yes. Only after we close the sale we pass it back. Yeah. In most cases, that was the case.
Did you ever sell? Were you in sales before Elastic Sales? I mean, you personally?
Yeah. Well, more or less everything I ever done as an entrepreneur was me being the first and sometimes the only salesperson. But I'd also had a real, like, one business that I built was basically me just hiring more salespeople and training salespeople and coaching salespeople. So I had a lot of experience in sales in general. But then at Elastic Sales, that you know, exposure to doing sales specifically for a new company and a startup, and specifically in SaaS and in technology, just exploded because we did so much of it.
I see. So that's what Bob was getting at when he sent me these notes. He said, you were in sales. You had a lot of experience. Why did it take doing Elastic Sales for you to understand the real pain that existed so that you could create a software? What would you say to that?
I think that the unique setup of having a room full of salespeople that were doing sales for many different types of businesses. So there's so many different use cases. And then also on top of that, having an engineering team that was sitting in that room next to salespeople, and then kind of it was really a unique environment where, you know, at times – the sales reps would turn around to the engineers and go, do you see this shit? This sucks. Why do I have to do this and this and this and that? And the engineers would be like, oh, yeah, you're right. This really does suck. Let's fix this. And then on the other hand, at times the engineer would just look over the shoulder of the sales rep and go, this is so stupid. Why do you do all this? Or why is all this paper around your desk every time you make a call? Why do you take notes on paper? Like, this is just stupid. And it was that kind of collaborative effort that made us start to realize, hey, you know what? Well, you know what is crazy? All the sales software that exists up until that point was basically nothing else than a database, a contact database. And sales reps were basically, like, the idea was you do your job and then you report what you just did. You tell us manually, this is what I did. I made 10 calls. I sent this emails. This customer has a new phone number. Like, you'll report this manually, like as an administrator of that database. And we realized to build sales software, since sales is a job, is a communication job, it needs to be a communication software. And it needs to just automatically track all your activity so that the data we're tracking is accurate and it's more vast because we track everything you do, not just what you're telling us you're doing. And it frees up all that time for you as a sales rep to do your job really, really well. And I think up until that point, most most of our competitors, they built the tool from a management perspective. What does management need? And how do we sell this successfully to big companies, which was, again, selling it to management? So nobody really cared that much if the individual salesperson at the bottom of the org would really like the software or would be enhanced in terms of their productivity or not. And go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Finish up, and then I want to underline something you said.
And I think that we were only concerned about the individual sales reps and their productivity, and we really just purely looked at it from a, how can this software make me do my job better as a sales rep versus how will this help, you know, forecasting and reporting and accounting, and how will this be, you know, working well with, you know, kind of our legal and security issues in the organization. Like, we don't care about any of that. We just cared about the individual rep doing their job better, faster, stronger. And that led us to having totally different insights on how to build the software.
The thing I want to underline in what you just said is that I've noticed a lot that entrepreneurs who do some kind of consulting for the clients that they want to build software for end up really understanding the pain and frustrations that they have, because they get to do the work on behalf of the client. They feel it on their bones, in their daily lives. And because they work with multiple clients, they get to see that problem from multiple people, and they start to find one single issue that needs to be solved. And in your case, it was the data entry. All right, let me take a moment here to talk about my sponsor, then come back, and I want to ask you a question about something that you just said, because that there's something kind of weird that you said that you guys had that I wouldn't have expected. And the sponsor is HostGator. And guys, if you're listening to this interview, you must understand that what Stelly did with Elastic was something that's repeatable. You take action that your customer does over and over every day. In his case, it's sales. It could be customer support. It could be content creating. It could be anything. And you standardize it and you sell it as a service. And I could think of so many different things that businesses do that can be done that way. Bookkeeping is an important one that's constantly being done by companies that can be systemized. And I think this model is something that I've seen people do over and over again. I'm looking at Elastic's website. Back then, it looks like you guys were called Elastic Inc. from 2012. September 2nd, 2012 is a snapshot that I have. It's just a standard website. There's not much to it. He could have just gone to HostGator, gotten a basic HostGator hosting package for under 10 bucks a month, put up his landing page explaining what he does, had a blog explaining all the milestones of the business, and started selling it as a service. And if you're out there and you're looking for an idea for something to do, or you're looking for an idea for something to add to your existing business, it's so easy to go to HostGator, get a website running within minutes, one-click install of WordPress, easy hosting from HostGator, and start offering the service. You can start doing it yourself, start hiring other people to do it with you, and pretty soon you have a business that scales, that grows, where you are helping your customers do the same thing. That, like, every customer maybe has customer service issues. You create an Elastic customer service business, or you create Elastic content creation business, or whatever it is that you notice that businesses that you want to service do over and over again. It's so easy to do. All you have to do is go to hostgator.com/mixergy. When you do that, you're going to get a discount on the price that they offer everyone else. And you're going to get their standard support every day of the year. You're also going to get unmetered disk space and bandwidth, unlimited email addresses, the whole thing. And if you're not happy with them, 45-day money-back guarantee. If you're starting a new business, it's so easy to go to HostGator and get started, and you could keep scaling up. Their packages get more and more intense with more and more features as you scale up, or you can just keep it simple and for under $4 a month, get started with them right now. Finally, I want to say that if you hate your hosting company, you don't have to stick with them. Just switch over to HostGator. HostGator.com/Mixergy. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Stelly, you mentioned that you guys had engineers. Why did you need engineers? You were just using other people's software. Why did you need to have developers around?
Well, when we started the business, so just before Elastic Sales, the team was doing something different, right? That we pivoted away from to doing Elastic Sales. So, you know, two of my co-founders.
This was super cool school, by the way.
No.
Oh, was it super cool school? What was it?
It was called SwipeGood.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's confusing. If you try to research me and put together the dots, it might be challenging. So yeah.
Don't make me go back to DVD Discount 24.
Yeah, no, that was not even in the U.S. This is like 18 years ago back in Germany. But okay. No, but the The company or the product was called SwipeGood, and it had nothing to do with sales or anything like that. And two of my co-founders were developers. So when we pivoted to Elastic, you know, we just had some developer resources, and we thought from the get-go, one of our ideas was that if we built this massive, we had really big ambitions. So if we built this massive Amazon AWS-like infrastructure for salespeople, software could help us scale that, you know, at a really crazy way. So that was kind of the original idea.
Were you thinking possibly that you could create a CRM?
No.
No, I mean, you just thought some kind of software would help you scale. What do you mean by software would help you scale?
Well, we there were multiple things we thought, right? We were like, okay, let's build our own internal CRM that will allow us to not have to have our reps do manual data entry, that will allow us to track phone conversations and all this in a much more powerful, transparent way for our clients. And then if the software is really great, that will help with retention because salespeople will love their work more because a big part of their pain and frustration in typical sales jobs is all the reporting and all the manual CRM stuff they have to deal with. And if we want to have that many different sales teams doing sales for thousands of different companies, we're going to have software that help us kind of scale this up and down and track.
I see. It was always to manage the business, not to create software for your clients.
Yes.
I see. Okay. And what software did you guys use? What was your CRM?
Well, from day one, we just used Close.io. Like, we just used our own software.
Oh, I thought you were using other people's software for a bit and it sucked, and that's when you guys decided to – No,
that never happened. So we, you know, I mean, I had used sales software before, but not for Elastic Sales. When we started Elastic Sales from day one, I knew I hated the software that was out there.
So when did you experience how crappy other people's software was that you knew about the whole tagging system? I thought it was by doing software for other people that you understood that there was a need.
Oh, no. So I had used sales software before and I disliked it, right? Then when we started Elastic, we started developing software from day one.
So where did you experience the pain of other software? I thought it was by seeing everyone else's crappy experience.
What was happening was that anytime we would take on a new client, the first thing they would do is they would give us access to their CRM so we could look at the data of what they're currently doing. And then inevitably we would have a call with a client, even knowing that we wouldn't use their CRM, we needed to see the data and we needed to have access to the data.
I see. So it wasn't the idea for creating the software that came by doing services for other people. It was the improvement on your own internal software that you understood how to do it because you were working with other people's software. So where was the period where you said, I'm working with other people's software, I hate other CRMs, I have to create my own for Close.io? Was it just throughout your life you knew it? Was this personal experience that led to that?
It was a lot of personal experience. So when we had the idea for Elastic Sales and we said, let's start doing outsourced sales for other companies, we decided from day one, let's build internal software to do that and to enable us to do that. Now, that was just an empty shell at that point, right? We had no real insights on what does that mean? What will that software look like? Why will it be better than other software? Honestly, there was not that much to it at the time for us.
I see. Right? As soon as you start doing sales, go ahead.
Oh, no. But once we started doing sales, hiring salespeople, doing sales for that many different companies, looking at all their other CRMs, slowly but surely, one insight at a time, we started building a point of view and a philosophy for what we wanted to build as our internal software. We gained all these insights by the work we did with others, but the decision to build software came even before these insights.
Where did the decision come from? What were you doing when the decision when the decision came to you?
Well, we had the idea for Elastic Sales. We did 2 weeks of me just cold calling companies, pitching them on the idea to see, is there a market out there? Because we didn't want to start a business without that. And once we had 7 companies that wanted to pay us money for us to do this for them, although we had, you know, nothing of credibility to show for yet, we decided, all right, let's try to build this business. And, you know, I said from the get-go to my 2 co-founders that were developers, let's build software, let's build our own little CRM internally that will empower us to do this. And the first thing I want you guys to do is, since we're going to be doing cold calling campaigns for these startups, let's build a phone system that's integrated in the CRM so we can do these calls out of our own software.
Got it. I see. Okay. So you knew right from the start, because you were a salesperson over the years, that's where you experienced the pain. It wasn't you experienced the pain because you were working for a lot of clients. It was you did sales before. Where was the point where you did the most sales using the worst software? Or where was the point where you had – where? Yeah, the point where it left a lasting impression on you?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I think it was just like a death by a thousand cuts. It was there was never like the most painful part, but I'd used sales software 10 years prior. And basically the experience was always, can I avoid using software? Do we really have to use a CRM? Can we avoid it a little further? And then eventually it was like giving up and saying, okay, we need to use one. And then now we're going to go through this painful process of having to import the data and set all the different...
I don't see where you had this... sorry, this feels a little tedious for the audience to hear. And usually this is the kind of thing I should do before the interview starts and get to more actionable stuff. But to me, it's really important to understand where the pain came from. And I think that anyone who's listening should be aware that if you're creating software even... What I've been noticing is that a lot of software companies will also have a service component. And I'll say, why? Why do you want to make a little bit of money servicing customers and dealing with the pain in the ass of dealing with their customers? And they often will say, we want to make sure that we keep using our own software. Yes, it's revenue and it's not that significant, but by doing work for some percentage of our customers, we recognize the pain that all of our customers feel. And so I want to understand like this pain point for you where it came up. I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile. I don't understand what period you were using software so much that you would experience the issues with Salesforce, that you would see that sales, where do you even have a team of salespeople where you would personally see that they weren't tagging right? It's not Super Cool School, which you did for a year. It's not Witbar Workshops, which you owned for a year. Where was it?
So it was actually, so the last time I had to use a CRM where it was painful was definitely Super Cool School, because the last 2 years of that business, we had pivoted to enterprise sales. And we were convincing large corporations to use our education software internally for their.
And so you had multiple salespeople doing that.
No, that was a case where it was just me. But I was doing. We were selling to Google, Oracle, SAP, to all these large.
And so you just wanted one piece of software for you to get things in the software right.
Yes, and those were really long sales cycles, right? 12, 18 months of communicating with multiple stakeholders and all that. That was the last time that I had felt the pain of sales software myself. The one of the very first businesses that I built, I was running a sales team of 30 to 40 people, and we were all using a CRM system.
But that was a long time before. That was, right? So basically, did you spend any time investigating Salesforce? Did you spend any time investigating any of the other software options out there?
Yeah, I always keep tabs on sales software just because sales was an interesting topic to me. I knew at that time I knew Salesforce pretty well, and I knew that I didn't like it as a system. I didn't want to use it, and I knew some of the startups that were out there, and I didn't really. They were very similar to Salesforce plus some added thing, like, you know, when social became a thing, it was like Salesforce plus social. When, you know, the iPhone came out, it was like this CRM that's mobile. Yeah. But it was all still using the same paradigm. So I knew what was out there. I don't want to say that I did extensive research of trying all the sales software that was out there, but I had a pretty good sense of what was available in the market, and I knew that I didn't like that software. I didn't want to use any of that software for 8 hours of my day.
Okay, one last area that I want to talk about with this, and then I want to talk about when companies should hire salespeople. Andy Ratcliffe, the former VC from Benchmark, told me that the reason companies succeed at certain periods and why they're even necessary is there's a new technology being available, something that couldn't have been done before because tech just wasn't around. And so for him at Wealthfront, it was suddenly financial institutions were opening up their APIs. So software like Wealthfront could actually manage payments manage my investments without having to do it all themselves. They could just use APIs to facilitate that. Was there any new technology that was available today that wasn't or when you launched that wasn't available before? Was there something that made this all possible?
Yeah. So when you started this, I was ready to disagree with you on this point. But as I was thinking about it, and as I listened to the full point that you were making, I was like, oh, yeah, I never thought about this. But there was actually. So for us, we made communication a really big part of the product. So having two-way VoIP calling and SMS within the product was something that was only possible from day one, because when we started building the software, there were companies like Twilio and Plivo and others that allowed you to use their telephony infrastructure to build software on top of it. So that was one thing. Okay. There were email communications, a really important part of our product, capturing all email communication with prospects and customers and doing that automatically. And even that, you know, there were kind of email infrastructure providers out there, much more powerful, much more modern, that we were able to use that. If we had to build all this on our own, it would have taken years versus it took us a few months. And even search, like, we're the most powerful search in CRM. It goes back to, like, giving people access to all the data and making sure the data is accurate. So in Closeo, the search part is really powerful. But that as well was built on Elasticsearch, on a search kind of technology engine that developers can utilize and integrate into their core product. So we did use a bunch of really core technology that makes Closeo great and what it is today. That if all these things didn't exist and we would have had to build them from the ground up, it would have slowed us down at a significant amount, and maybe not made possible what we wanted to build.
Elasticsearch is what you guys use to search the data in Closeo, Close.io. And what did you use to make phone calls? It sounds like it was not Twilio.
It was Plivo.
Plivo, because it was cheaper than Twilio.
No, actually, back in the day when we made the choice, Twilio was much more focused on SMS technology, and a lot of the stuff that we wanted to do on the calling side, they just didn't offer yet. But now they've caught up on that, obviously. But we wanted to do a lot of just more enhanced stuff on the calling side that Twilio back then didn't offer. So it wasn't even a cost factor.
Okay, and then your email. How did you scrape the email? And the key idea, the reason that this is so important to the software for anyone who doesn't know Close.io is that when someone makes a phone call in Close.io, it automatically gets tracked in the software. When someone gets an email or sends an email, it's automatically recorded to that customer's record, etc. So what did you guys use to do email?
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank. So right now I'm looking actually at a blog post that our head of product had wrote a while back, which was the tech stack behind Closeo. I'm scrolling down to find the...
Why don't I give you a moment to do that? And while you do that, I'm going to talk about my sponsor. We'll finish this part of the conversation up, and then we're going to talk about at what point does a company need to get salespeople and how do they do it. So the sponsor is a company called TopTal. Top is in top of your head, tal is in talent. And as you guys noticed, one thing that Steli did was he created software for internal use, and then it became software that he could sell as a service to other people, and now it's a hugely successful SaaS, software as a service, right? Well, if your team internally is struggling with something, that's a really good indication that maybe you need to build it. Maybe you need to actually have something created for you. Well, your team might be too stretched. Maybe you don't have enough talent on the team to do it. Maybe you don't have someone who has the experience to build what you need. Well, if you are in that situation, you could go to TopTal. They have experts, people who work with multiple customers, multiple businesses. So they've seen on the inside how software is built. You know that TopTal has tested them to make sure they're the best of the best, and people wear their TopTal success. The fact that they actually got through TopTal's rigorous screening process is a badge of honor. If you're a developer, it says a lot that you got through it. And so you could go to TopTal, tell them what you're looking to build internally, tell them how you want to do it, and hire one of their developers to do it internally for you. And then, since it satisfies you and it actually works and it solves your pain point, you can productize it and sell it to other people. And maybe like Steli's experience, this will become software that's so big that it becomes bigger than everything else you're doing. So the big point is, we keep talking about hiring developers to build something for our customers, but sometimes we need something internally for our internal use. And just like Basecamp was built because the people of 37 Signals understood their internal pain, just like Close.io was built because Steli and his team knew the pain really well, same thing could happen to you. You find a problem, build internal solutions for it that work really well, and then start taking it out to other people and see if they need it. If nothing else, it will help do your job better and give your company an advantage. And maybe it becomes the product that you end up selling that eclipses everything else that you have. If you're looking for a great developer or team of developers to enhance your team or to build your new product, I urge you to check out this special URL they created just for Mixergy listeners. It is going to offer you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Go check them out at toptal.com/Mixergy. That's toptal.com/Mixergy. All right. Stelly, were you able to find it?
Yes. It's called Nylas. So N-Y-L-A-S. That's what we're using on the email side.
I didn't realize that existed at the time. All right. So Nylas, yeah, that's open source, isn't it? Yeah, it's created by a Mixergy fan. I'd gone back and forth with him about it. Now he turned it into to like a desktop email software. I see. But you're saying, look, the bigger picture is the software existed all of a sudden. You didn't have to create the email scraping. You didn't have to create the phone, the VoIP software. You could just tap into everything that already existed. And were you also by scraping email? Maybe scraping is not the right word, but pulling in email data, pulling in VoIP data, et cetera. Were you also able to make the software smarter, give your salespeople more insights into what they should do? Like, was it just recording the data, or was it also advising based on the data?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was purely recording the data, right? And really, it was based on a simple insight, which is salespeople hate manual data entry, hence they're doing it slowly and poorly, which means bad data in the system, and which means less sales productivity from salespeople. So how can we take away all the manual data entry? How can we automate it so we have more data, more accurate data, and we have more happy and productive salespeople, which at the end of the day we really want. We want the sales reps to do their job really well and to drive revenue. That insight, I think that, you know, having the insight at the right time where you have the technology to build the thing, to service that or touch on that, I think is crucial. But I think the insight is really what was driving it for us more than anything else. We didn't see the technology and ask ourselves, what could we do with this? We had the insight and then sought out the technology to fix that pain point.
And the technology enabled it. And if you would have said, we have this insight, but the technology didn't exist, you'd say, well, we're not going to reinvent Skype here and also create – it just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So big picture here for me is the understanding that you experienced the pain yourself and you said, I need to solve it internally. Your clients had such tremendous pain with the software they were using that when they saw your solution, they said, we want this for ourselves. The software kept getting better because you saw the problem that your clients had and you just kept seeing it on a regular basis. Issue, issue, issue became a feature in your software and allowed to close.io to address a lot of the problems that salespeople have with their software. And there's the loop of the find the pain loop, if I had to give it a name. All right, let me move on to the second part of the conversation, which is about salespeople. I've noticed, as I said to you, that a lot of software now is being sold not just with great landing pages, not just with great Google ads and Facebook ads, et cetera, but with actual salespeople. And so I read your book, The Sales Hiring Playbook, and I was looking to understand at what point it makes sense to hire a salesperson. And you said in your book, you actually were very clear. You said, do you remember what the lifetime value is that you recommend, or do you want me to read it?
It's multiple thousands of dollars, so it should be more than 5,000.
So that's what I thought. But in your book, you say you have to ask yourself three questions before you hire a full-time salesperson. Question number one is my customer lifetime value high enough? You should have a CLTV, customer lifetime value, of at least $1,000 before hiring a full-time salesperson. That seemed low to me. And now you're saying maybe it needs to be a little bit higher?
Yeah, it should definitely be a little bit higher. I mean, everything always depends. The math always depends on frequency and quantities, right? So if you have a massive amount of leads that you can easily reach and the sales cycle is 10 minutes, you know, that decreases the numbers of how much time it takes you, how much customer lifetime value you need, because it decreased the customer acquisition costs so radically. But usually when you need salespeople to do the job, the sales cycle is typically not just 10 minutes and there's not an unlimited pool of people that you can get in touch with. So it adjusts up. In some businesses, the customer lifetime value needs to be $100,000 to make it work.
Because it takes so many sales calls and such a long sales.
Because
so let me ask you this.
Yes,
so
exactly.
We have two products in one of the businesses that I launched recently, Bot Academy. One is we create bots for clients, chatbots. And the other one is we teach people how they could create it and offer it as a service. That teaching element costs $2,000. At that point, does it make sense for me to hire a salesperson to talk to customers?
It definitely makes sense for you to test sales, right? So the advice I always give is that you should always start yourself, doing some sales, right? The first salesperson should always be one of the founders or the founders as a team. And I would always start with the inbound leads, right? So today you have people that come, sign up, they look at things, and then your landing page or whatever it is, you know, sells them on them putting in their credit card information or it doesn't. I would split test that with what happens if we introduce a sales element, in the sense that what happens if we reach out to customers proactively, either in an email or a call or a chat, and we offer to have a conversation, a consultation, a demo, whatever it takes. How does it affect the conversion numbers? How many more people can I convince and encourage to purchase the product or the training? And if you see that you can make a significant enough difference, it might be worth to start hiring a few people and have a sales team that does inbound sales as a step number one.
So wait, would the first one be offering someone who comes to the sales page and getting rid of the buy button and replacing it with a get a demo or schedule a call button? Is that what you're talking about? Or are you saying find people who've gone through the sales process and didn't buy and call them, just send out a message?
It could be a variety of ways of doing this, right? You could do a hardcore A-B test where you have one group of inbound leads that can click a buy button and the other ones get a contact me button or an area they put in their contact information and you get in touch with them. It could be where you allow people to buy if they want to, and those that don't, you reach out, you follow up with, you have a conversation, try to uncover why didn't they buy, was there an objection or an issue or a confusion that you can clarify as a human being on the phone or in email or whatever. You could experiment with it, but the whole idea would just be to see, hey, if we proactively try to sell to these people, human to human, would that make a difference? Is our audience open to that, and it will that move the needle significantly enough to offset the cost of having a human being doing this job?
I see. Okay, so just pick a spot anywhere in there where you're most likely to get some sales and start testing, and you want the founder to do it himself or herself. Why should she do it herself?
Well, first, because nobody's going to sell the product or service as well as you. Second, because of what we talked earlier, customer insights, right? If you don't have a sales team yet, you most likely are still pretty early in your process. You want to gain more insights about who is my customer, what are the issues they're having, how do they respond when I call them, how do they respond when they get an email from me. There's going to be you're going to look at the matrix differently than a newly hired salesperson. You're going to have an aha moment when somebody tells you something that might lead to a product innovation or might lead to you marketing or wording things differently that a rep off the streets will not get. So, and you're not going to be able to judge performance of another human being if you've never done this job at all in any way or form. So I encourage founders to do sales a little bit themselves first before they bring in somebody and tell them to replicate results or even improve on the results that we're able to get themselves.
I see. Okay. And then once you do that, I guess, what's the cost? What do you pay for someone like that?
Again, it highly depends on what type of person it will take to successfully sell to your audience, right? So if you can get really inexperienced, really young people to train them and get them to successfully sell your product, that's going to be much cheaper than if you do, you know, sell to CTOs or Fortune 500 companies and you need to have like industry experts with 20 years of experience. So it will depend very greatly. I think that at the lowest level, and also location-wise, right? Are we talking about the U.S., West, East Coast? Are we talking middle of America? But just to give people a benchmark, I think that today a good average would be probably that, you know, at the very cheap end and more inexperienced kind of, and on the sales spectrum, you're probably going to have to pay 30, 40K and then come up with some kind of a bonus structure on top. And at the very high end, it might be, you know, 100,000, 200,000, depending on, you know, what kind of sales you do. But that's another reason, right? Especially if you don't have funding, venture funding, to just experiment with these things, you want to do it yourself and see that you can accomplish some kind of a success that gives you the confidence to go and pay somebody a salary and tell them to do the job.
I see when I'm on your site, Nick Persico. Comes up in a little chat bubble on the right side of the screen. Is he a salesperson?
Yeah, he's a salesperson and he's the head of sales right now. So, yeah.
And so your head of sales at close.io, the website, comes up right now. So if I chat with him, I'm going to talk to the head of sales.
Yep.
Interesting. and so do you guys try to close sales? Sorry?
I was just about to say, just like every newsletter we send out comes from Stelly@close.io, and if you reply, you're replying to me directly.
Got it. So it's not necessarily that it's really Nick.
Oh, it is really Nick.
Oh, it really is. So let me actually see. I was just doing a search in my inbox here. Let me do it. From colon Stelly. And when I do that, I get every newsletter that you send me. So it says, Stelly from close.io sent me an email. My consulting rate is $10,000 per session. You get 3 sessions for free. That's a great headline. If I hit reply on that, oh, it does go to you. It's the exact same email you and I have been using to coordinate this interview.
Yeah, it goes directly to me.
I see. Okay, and that's why you wanted to go directly to him. What chat bubble software do you use, and does it tie in with close.io?
Yes, we've just integrated with it. It's Drift, and we're just testing it. You're actually one of the first. We just implemented this, I think, yesterday, to test it out on a few pages. So we wanted to see how many more leads sales can drive through the Drift chat interface, and we integrated it with close.io. So we'll see. This is a new experiment.
I see it right now, actually, on the side. I just sent him a message. And look, there it is. It's Nick who's responding right back. Sure is me. I'm talking with Stelly now. I could understand, I could expect that if I wanted to, get some sales insight about how much should I pay my people, I could just come into your website and say, hey, Nick, what do you think I should be paying this person who does? All right, so now I've got that. The other two questions are my customers large enough? Sorry, are my large customers struggling to convert? That makes sense. And then the other one is there complexity in the sales process for my larger accounts? And so a salesperson probably won't make a difference in a frictionless sales process. I get that. I'm looking to see where salespeople come into your process. It's not on the homepage. I can just try it myself before I buy it. It's on the pricing page. When I go to see your prices, I could hit a button and try it for free and then keep paying you guys. Or that's when I start to see the try buttons get converted into schedule a live demo button, right? Why did you guys pick that spot? It seems like I guess that's pretty obvious, right? You're just saying if anyone who's on the pricing page is more likely to buy, boom, let's put our try there.
Yeah. And it's also, that's a point of friction, right? When people are on the pricing page, they might be concerned, they might be having objections. Yeah, will we really use this feature? This is too expensive. Will this really make sense for us from an ROI point of view? So people typically have questions around the pricing. So it makes sense to put a salesperson or give you intimacy to somebody that can answer these questions and help you with that.
Can I tell you, you use Drift better than frickin' Drift uses Drift? I was on their site. I was considering using Drift for my site. They're so big on the automated response when they use Drift on their website that it's just a little too much. Immediately the chat asks me, are you the CMO? Or are you the, I go, no, can I talk to a human? And then the bot responds back with something nonsensical. And then after a few times of me talking back to the bot and the bot giving me more options on Drift's website, a person comes in and says, hey, I'm a real person. Yes, I can help you. I said, great. I have a question. His response was, hey, are you at Intel? I said, no, I'm not at Intel. I have a question. I think I'm done here. I think I'm moving on. They really need some sales training over there. It's great software, and I think David Cancel is gonna be a hit with this thing, but I think he could use some more human understanding in there.
Yeah, I think that a lot of companies just overdo this stuff. You know, it's the same thing with some of the software that I want to use. I stopped using it because of all the intercom bubbles in the software telling me what to do, when to do it. And let me just use this thing. I just want to use the software. I don't want a bubble in.
That is my problem with site. Intercom's a really good tool, and Drift is competing with Intercom. The problem with Intercom is not only a lot of bubbles. If I'm on a website, dude, where Stelly, if they have intercom bubbles on their site, as soon as I go within an interview to go to someone's site, the bubble goes boop. Oh, damn it! Now they know that I'm on the site, right? It's such a frustrating experience. All right, let's talk about then how to recruit the unrecruitable. One thing that you said in your book was in the sales hiring playbook. I'm trying to get better at mentioning my interviewees' books. Is you said do a test, do a trial, even a 3-month contract or a consultant base. Can you really do that with someone who's tough to recruit? Can you really say to them, come in for 3 months, see if you like it? Won't they want something more steady?
Yeah, not at the hello, right? So you're not going to be able to call somebody or talk to somebody that is amazing at what they do and just offer them something that's very risky for them and it's zero risk for you. That's not typically how it will work out. But if you, what I call slowly fall in love with each other, right? If you take some time to get to know them, allow them to really get to know the company and the opportunity, you see that both sides fall in love. I do think that it makes sense to stay with that analogy, even if it's overused, to date each other for a little while before you get married, right? And this can make, really make sense for both parties to say, hey, let's come up with some kind of an arrangement where we really will only know if this works if once we work with each other for a little bit. And depending on the situation, depending on the individual, depending on your company, this might be different. In some cases, you can have a, you can set up something where somebody does a 3 or 6 month internship before they, you hire them as a junior sales rep. And in other cases, it can't be. It might just be that they're going to spend, you know, 2 or 3 weekends in a row coming to the office and working with you on some projects that are throwaway projects that have nothing to do with the core job. But you, I would always try to get to work with somebody. I always try to really figure it out. And lots of people always ask me, what's the best interview question for a sales rep? And I always go, it's like saying, what's the best interview question to figure out who's a good basketball player? Like, there's many questions you can ask that might be good, but I would always throw them the ball and see them play. So in this case, I would always have a sales call with them. Tell them, hey, have you ever sold something? Yeah. Okay, sell me that, right? Let's do a sales mock call where I go, ring, 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 this is Bob, and you convince me that this is a good product, or you have a conversation with me about this. I would always just want to see how do they perform as a salesperson versus what do they tell me about, you know, their sales career.
You know what? I'm so glad that I read this book before the conversation. You said there is no list of questions. The book gives 10 questions to ask.
Yeah, it has. Well, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't interview somebody for the job. But if I could only do one thing, instead of asking you a question, I would do a mock call with you. And the book says that as well. So
be open with me. Did you write this book or do you hire a writer?
No. So all the ideas in this book are for me. They're all based on videos that I've recorded talking through the different ideas.
I see. And then someone compiles it.
Yes. Okay. The writing is turned out of the audio video files that I recorded.
Because you do specifically in the book give people a list of 10 questions that they should be asking. The last one is, how do you think this interview is going so far? The first one is, why sales? Why are you in sales? Second is, what do you want to? Why do you want to sell this product? And you give a list of questions. I thought the book was actually really actionable. What's surprising to me is I think there are a couple of times in this interview that you contradict what's in the book.
I think that I contradict many of the pieces of advice that I give are contextual. This is one where I actually have a blog post that says, hey, you need to do mock calls with people. You need to throw them the ball. This analogy of like throwing them the ball versus just asking questions there. And then we have at least 3 blog posts that are like, here's some good interview questions. Or here's a little game that I play in interviews sometimes where I tell them to give me one of their weaknesses, and then I'll share one of our company weaknesses, and we'll go back and forth until we discourage each other. So Yeah, the idea is either we discourage each other from working together. If we can't discourage each other from working with each other, that's a pretty good indicator that we might enjoy working together, right? So I do think that my advice is not black and white in the sense that I would never ask an interview question. That's crazy. That's not what I meant. And if that came across that way, that's not really what I wanted to say.
One of the things that I thought was especially helpful about the book was you said, look, if you're looking for salespeople, look for teams that are especially amazing and people who are especially amazing. And then here's the quote that you said that you should say to someone who you're interested in. Get on a call with them, say, we're looking to hire amazing sales talent like you for our inside sales CRM. Would you be willing to hop on a call with me this week and tell me what you were looking for when you joined the company? And so what you're saying to them is, hey, I'm looking to hire someone as great as you. Can you tell me what your mindset was, why you made this decision, and kind of learn from them? And then through that, maybe you end up hiring this person. Or as you say, look, if you get a rejection, turn that rejection into a referral to someone else that they might know that would be good.
Yeah. So this is a technique I've used for many years in terms of hiring. People that are really in a great position, that are really successful, they're not looking for a job. So if you ask them, hey, can we jump on a call to talk about you potentially working for me? It's not going to be very appealing. As well as if you ask referrals, when we hire somebody new, I would never ask somebody, hey, who of your friends or ex-colleagues is really great that might want to work here? Because people will always filter out all the people that are doing amazing and are happy right now in their career. But those are the people I want to talk to. So I would always ask, who's somebody you know that would never work here, that's just too successful? And then I would call them and go, hey, you know, your friend has told me that you're doing really well. There's no chance I can hire you, but I want to learn more about you. How did you get so successful? Why did you get this job? How did they get to recruit you, right? How did that happen? And then oftentimes people let their guard down. And again, maybe organic love can happen because people are open and there's an opportunity. If not, maybe you can learn something about how to hire people, great people, or you'll get a referral from them. But I find that that indirect way of reaching out is much more successful than if you're like, we have a job offer. Do you want to jump on a call? No, the great people don't want to jump on a call because they're happy with their job.
You also say that you should give people, well, I can't find it in my notes, kind of assignments, homework to do when you're interviewing them. And I know we've gone over time here. We're coming close to the end here. But you want them to do things like write a cold email to a potential prospect. You want to see how they write. You want them to call your competitors and do a little bit of research for you, right? Is there something else that you'd suggest that you have a potential salesperson do? Because as you said, there's some people who interview great, but they suck at sales. And there's some people who are great at sales, but they're not selling themselves all the way.
Yeah. And even those homework assignments, we've seen from the past that sometimes people are really amazing at them, but that does not – it's all just pieces of the puzzle. It in itself does not – is not a perfect indicator for them them doing well in the job. But yeah, we've asked people to write a cold email and send it to us as if we were a prospect selling our product to us. We've asked them to go through a sales cycle and then collect a one-page summary of what their experience was when they signed up for our product, when they got our emails, when they got a call from a sales rep. We've asked them to do competitive research and say, hey, go and look at other people's product and then tell us why they're not better than us, right? Why wouldn't you want to work there versus us? What's the difference? There are a few of these types of research type of activities, or even with cold emailing, it's easier where we can tell them, write us a cold email, send it to us, because we have so many such a huge sample set to see like who writes really well, who, and then comment on it. Why did you write this subject line? Why did you write the email? Why did you structure it the way that you did?
You mean comment on it, within the Google Docs so that they explain their thought process. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Why don't I close out with just an understanding of your process? I'm on your blog. It seems like what you do is, because you create a ton of content, dude. It seems like your process is you record a video. Like, I'm looking at one of your blog posts here called Forget Sales for Startup. Enterprise Sales for Startups, Forget Quick Experiments. It's a well-written post, and on the bottom of it is an 18-minute YouTube video with you. It seems like what you do is you talk into the mic for 18 minutes, you just download all your thoughts, and then somebody takes it, turns it into a blog post. After you get a collection of blog posts on the same topic, somebody takes it and turns it into – that's it. Somebody takes it and turns it into a book. You're pointing and nodding.
Yes. When we started, I would write a draft and then send it to somebody, and it would go back and forth, and it was a super slow process. Until one day, I was a week over my deadline on sending a draft, and then the person called me and said, just talk into your iPhone, record a fucking message, and send me an audio, and I will write the draft. And I did that, and I was like, my God, this was so easy. This took me 10 minutes to do. And that led me to think, well, if I stop referring to it as the blog post and say his name all the time, we could just release the audio as a piece of content. And then we did that a few times, and I thought, if I just turn on the webcam, we could have video, audio, and since that insight, it really changed our content production, because as you said, I can do 2 videos a day, 3 videos a day, easy. I can create an insane amount of content just like downloading information or strategy or story. Writing a draft, I'd be much slower, much worse at. So that's kind of a content production process.
You're good at just talking into the mic. You do a podcast with Heaton Shaw, the startupchat.com is where people can see it. It's just you and Heaton chatting and riffing. I sent you a love note, and I sent Heaton a love note because of this podcast, because you know, it's just like talking like friends, just sitting around at a coffee shop, and somehow it becomes insightful. Like you'll say, hey, you know what, Heaton, why don't we talk about all the things we learned by promoting a podcast? And just like off the top of your head, here are all the things you learned. I go, that's actually very useful. And it's interesting to see that they have the same problem that I do. Like, Heaton's number one at data analytics, right? He had an analytics company that competed with Google Analytics and partnered up with them in some ways. And he's even struggling with analytics for podcasting. That really helps me understand why we're struggling with analytics for podcasting. And that helps me see, how does he deal with a situation where analytics sucks? What does he think through, right? And how do you think about that issue? So I really like it. And I could see your process. I think the process that you're talking about that you have would suck for other people because they don't have really good – they don't have good writers on staff, but you seem to. So someone takes this video, 18 minutes long video, turns it into a short blog post that's very detailed, and then this book doesn't feel like someone copied each blog post and put it into a book. It feels like it's a – I thought you wrote it from scratch at first. It had your voice. It all seemed to flow from piece to piece to piece, and it all made sense together. And – I know we shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but dude, you have the best fucking covers out there. Every freaking book has such a really nice cover on it, which makes it feel like it's a real book. You don't seem like you're not patting yourself on the back for that one. You seem a little surprised that I said that.
No. I was just thinking that the marketing team will love this. I'm going to have to like cut that part out where you say all these nice things and send it to them, because it's all due to them. All I do is I turn on the webcam and I speak. Everything else I can't take credit for. So it's all the marketing.
It's really well done. I mean, the covers, because when you first gave me the book for free, I said, look at this. I'm friends with Stelly. He's giving me the digital version for free. Most people want to mail me stuff. I'd rather see the digital. And then I read it. I said, this is a good book. It's like 120 pages, which tells me it's probably a lead magnet, but it's well done. And the cover, though, made me feel like, well, it's still substantial. This is really good. All right. Anyway, this book that I talked about, I can recommend it. I don't know what else is in the bundle, but I can recommend the Sales Hiring Playbook. I think it's a really good collection of advice for hiring salespeople. I think what I've taken away from this conversation about that is there are no hard and fast rules. Even if the book says, hey, wait till you get $1,000 lifetime value for your customer, that doesn't necessarily mean that's an absolute number. But the benchmark, the thought that goes into where do I start and the specific advice is helpful. How do you feel about me asking the question about, do you write this book? Because I was looking at your face when I said it, and I thought I saw a little bit of hurt in your eyes as I said it. Were you hurt?
No, not at all. Not at all. No. You projected that hurt onto me because no. The reason why I like Mixergy, the reason why I've been a paying member and a subscriber for many, many years now, and been a fan and a friend, is because you ask difficult questions and sometimes the honest questions. And when I come on to talk to you, I expect to have a conversation with a friend and to be challenged or be asked.
Thanks.
And this is not a secret. This is actually not really a secret. It's not something that I would never reveal. I've been very honest about how we create content because it might be useful to others. So no, not at all. Not at all.
Thanks. I'm feeling especially sensitive about it because for some reason now I'm starting to feel really hurt feelings about all the people who ask me to edit it. And it gives me agita on my stomach that a lot of guests say, Andrew, I didn't want to say this. Andrew, why'd you say that? Andrew, and it gives me stomach pains to even think about and bring it up to you. And so that's why. But I care about this. And the reason I asked you for extra time, I said, can I have 5 more minutes? Can I have a few more minutes? I wanted to read the book. I was so busy thinking about what I wanted out of this interview, which was, I want to understand how you understood your customer's pain. That's the thing that I'm most curious about, that I realized, holy crap, he sent me this book. I didn't even read it. So I wanted 5 more minutes and then another. And I'm a speed reader, so I can read this stuff and actually take good notes and remember things. Like when you mention something, I remember where I saw it in the book. So I needed extra time, and I really appreciate that you gave me that because, as I said, I care about these interviews. I want this stuff to be useful. I don't want to do one of these fluffy conversations that don't get anywhere. Stelly, thanks so much for being on here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's always an honor. You've done so much for the entrepreneurial community and really putting out amazing content. And I think that a lot of people that are hurt might be hurt because they're not used. They're interviewed all the time. They're a million podcasts.
Yes,
they're just not used to be asked follow-up questions when they give answers. They're not being used to be pushed a little bit in a conversation when something they said is contradicting or doesn't make sense to you. So I think that people are just not used to that. And I think that's why you stand out and why I appreciate everything you do. So keep it up, brother.
Thanks. All right. Congratulations on the success of Close.io. I've got to tell you guys, go back and watch Stelly from years ago the way that I did. The guy's got, I've said this before, I keep saying it, he gets more and more swagger, more and more confidence, more and more control of himself. And the reason is Close.io is kicking ass. I looked at people who use Close.io and said, is this bullshit? Is this empty software that now you're committed $65 a month and you can't cancel? No, they really like the software. So, of course, you're proud. People really like your software. Revenues are growing. And you could be proud of the fact that you can just talk into a mic. And then this beautiful piece of content comes out, blog post, book, the whole thing. I like when I see businesses that are working so well, like a machine. You could be very proud of it. And of course, you are. Anyone out there who wants to go check it out can go check it out at theclose.io. And he's got a bundle of the book that I read, which is the sales hiring playbook and a bunch of other stuff, including email templates. Basically, it's a lead magnet for him, but the content is good, so it's worth giving your email address. And frankly, his emails also are well done. So it's worth going over to close.io/Mixergy to get that book and everything else that's included with it. Thanks so much for doing this, and thank you to my two sponsors, toptal.com/Mixergy and hostgator.com/Mixergy. Thanks, Deli.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.